what is it that makes us as humans different, even, shall I say, better than monkeys? Well, maybe not much these days if you've been watching the news, but we do have a few things going for us as a species here and there. Hello, everybody. I'm Brian Hanna. Thanks for joining me for another episode of Better Than Monkeys here from WQON Radio. Well, sure, our primate cousins are cute and fuzzy, and they can even be a little wascally at times, but never as wascally as that wascally wabbit, Bugs Bunny. Well, a few years back, our good friend George Daugherty was hanging out with some friends, and they were watching videos of those classic Bugs Bunny cartoons, the ones with the large orchestra backgrounds, long-haired hair, corny concerto, what's opera doc? And he was so inspired that he decided these Bugs Bunny cartoons needed to be on the big screen in concert halls all over the world. So he, along with partner David Wong, created the iconic Bugs Bunny at the Symphony programs, which bring these great Bugs Bunny cartoons with a full orchestra to large screens and concert halls all around the world. Well, I was fortunate enough to catch up with George Daugherty and get him to talk with us for just a few minutes about some of the historical context of these cartoons, some of the people involved. How did they put together these massive orchestras at Warner Brothers? How were these people so creative 80 years ago in creating the Bugs Bunny franchise? And I found out the whole scoop from George Daugherty, and he's going to tell us right now, what's up, Doc, with Bugs Bunny at the Symphony.
What's up, Doc?
Of course, you recognize that as the iconic Looney Tunes opening featuring Bugs Bunny's iconic what's up, Doc? Well, we're going to talk to a man who is bringing Bugs Bunny back to the forefront through his Bugs Bunny at the Symphony concerts. I'm, of course, talking about George Daugherty. George took some time out of his busy schedule to spend some time with us here on WQLN Radio and Better Than Monkeys. Here's my interview with one of the creators and the conductor of Bugs Bunny at the Symphony, the inimitable George Daugherty. So I'll kick off with this. Bugs Bunny's going to be 80 in 2020. And you know, you can go to Hollywood and odds of you seeing a rabbit on the streets of Hollywood are probably pretty slim, especially a wascally one, but you might just see a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame for Bugs Bunny. Bugs Bunny is one of the main characters in an upcoming production of a brand new production created by George Daugherty and David Kalik Wong. Did I pronounce that right?
Perfectly.
Perfectly. David's not here today, but George Daugherty is joining us here today. The Erie Philharmonic will be presenting this on September 21st at the Warner Theater at 2:30 p.m. and at 8 p.m. There are two shows. ErieFil.org for more information. You're the conductor. You're one of the creators. Want to tell us about this production, the name, and what we can expect?
I am more than happy to. We have been doing this crazy concert, or a reasonable facsimile thereof, for 30 years, three decades, which is hard to believe for me. When we started out this concert, I had the waistline of Bugs Bunny, and now I recently had the waistline of Giovanni Jones, the big big baritone from High Note. Although I did just lose weight, so I'm heading back to Bugs Bunny territory, actually. But for your listeners who don't know what we're talking about, and how possibly could a conversation about Looney Tunes and Bugs Bunny and incredible symphony orchestras being, exist in the same plane of reference? The deal is that we all grew up on these cartoons sitting on our living room floor. I sat on a living room floor in Indiana, in which case it would either be green or orange shag carpeting. I don't remember. We had both. And on Saturday mornings, we would watch Looney Tunes. And what we didn't realize back in those days is that these cartoons were not only brilliantly and incredibly hilarious as pieces of film, cinematic jewels, but they were filled with classical music. Classical music that had been adapted by the great Milt Franklin, and more so by his predecessor, the incredible Carl Stalling, who really invented the entire, sort of language of animation music. And I can tell you more about Carl Stalling later because his story is just amazing. But this really was an amazing thing that had never been done before, because Warner Brothers wanted to show a cartoon before every single one of their movies. And people used to go to the movies every Saturday night or Saturday matinee at places exactly like the Warner Theater.
Maybe even the Warner Theater.
Well, yes. And of course, the fact that we're at the Warner Theater is one of the ways in which the heavens are aligning gorgeously for when we bring this concert here, because the Warner Theater here in Erie is not only sublimely, incredibly gorgeous. I mean, I have conducted in more movie palaces that have been turned into concert halls and performing arts centers than anybody I know. They don't come more beautiful than this theater. And it's one of the last surviving theaters that was built by the Warner Bros, the Warner Brothers themselves, Jack, Harry, Albert. I forget who I'm missing. There's a fourth one. And that's what they did before they went to Hollywood to make movies, is they built movie theaters. And the Warner Theater in Erie is one of the last remaining standing Warner Theaters. So to do this material there is just, you know, a bit of kismet. September 21st is also Chuck Jones's birthday. It would be Chuck Jones's 107th birthday. Chuck Jones, who directed most of the cartoons that are in this concert. So back to that. You know, let's talk about Chuck's cartoons. What's Opera Doc? It's full of Wagner, the entire Ring cycle, Die Walküre, Götterdämmerung, Siegfried, Rienzi. And if that wasn't enough, they decided to add in Tannhäuser, The Flying Dutchman, Lohengrin, Das Rheingold. I'm sorry, I missed that back there in the Ring cycle part. So we have 8 Wagnerian operas, which, you know, there are people who go all around the world to see the Ring cycle in its complete form. They spend tens of thousands of dollars doing this. Here at the Erie Philharmonic, we are going to give you the entire Ring cycle plus 4 other Wagner operas in 6 minutes. Doesn't require an airline ticket, doesn't require a hotel, doesn't require going to Germany or anywhere else.
No co-signers necessary.
No co-signers. You don't have to mortgage your house to do it. So it's full of this incredible classical music. The Rabbit of Seville is the Barber of Seville. Long-haired hair with the aforementioned Giovanni Jones baritone has Wagner, Rossini, Donizetti, Smetana, von Suppé. Every Roadrunner chase scene is the Dance of the Comedians from the Bartered Bride by Smetana. As we were coming here today, we were listening to your station in the car, and they were playing the Liszt Hungarian Rhapsody. The Liszt Hungarian Rhapsody appears in so many cartoons, but in this particular concert, a brilliant cartoon called Rhapsody Rabbit. And snippets of it appear many, many other places. So that's the connection between classical music and cartoons. And so in 1990, I had this harebrained idea to put this all in a concert, and our original concert was called Bugs Bunny in Concert. What a name. But we ended up going to Broadway, to the Gershwin Theater. And we had no idea. Warner Brothers had no idea. None of us had any idea how this was going to play. Because now there are 80 gazillion film concerts with, you know, film on the big screen and live orchestra touring the
it's
country.
It's the new big thing.
It's the new big thing. Star Wars, Harry Potter, on and on and on and on. Singing in the Rain, American in Paris, the new, the old. We were the first ones to do this, the very first ones to do this. We had no idea how it would be received. Well, amazingly, it sold out every single performance. We had to extend the run. And actually, we were the last thing in the Gershwin Theater until Wicked came in and stayed there forever. We realized we had something. So we toured it as Bugs Bunny on Broadway for about 20 years. And then in 2010, we changed it to Bugs Bunny at the Symphony. And we have performed it with every great orchestra in America and North America and so many of the world. The New York Philharmonic, where we've sold it out, you know, 4 times. Philadelphia Orchestra, Cleveland Orchestra, the Los Angeles Philharmonic at the Hollywood Bowl 22 times. San Francisco Symphony, so many other orchestras, and our favorite, the Erie Philharmonic. Fabulous orchestra. You would not expect a world-class symphony orchestra in a city the size of Erie, although I love Erie And so, but it is not.
It's not a huge city.
It's not Los Angeles or New York in terms of population and demographics. Right. Yet here there's this fabulous orchestra, this fabulous theater, and it all comes together. And so this is a new version. We have added a bunch of new cartoons. We still have the great classics. And this is the world premiere happening in Erie with the Erie Philharmonic at the Warner Theater. Our previous world premieres have taken place at the Hollywood Bowl with the LA Philharmonic. They've taken place at the Sydney Opera House with the Sydney Symphony. They've taken place at Wolf Trap with the National Symphony at the Kennedy Center. And now this
Erie, Pennsylvania.
Erie, PA.
That's really exciting. And, you know, it's serious business, too. Even though it's cartoons and the music has been adapted to fit the whole cartoon genre, it's serious business. This is some pretty heavy-duty symphonic lifting that you're going to have to take the Erie Philharmonic through, aren't you?
Well, it's incredibly difficult. It's incredibly fast. We have a little saying, there's no slow movements in Looney Tunes. You know, when you do any kind of a Beethoven symphony, a Mahler symphony, a Tchaikovsky symphony, a Mozart symphony, you know, there's the big opening, first movement, very exciting, usually, you know, Allegro con brio or whatever. Then there's an andante, and then there's a scherzo. And then, you know, there's another slow movement. And then there's the big finish. So it doesn't kill the musicians. Every Looney Tunes score is, you know, pedal to the metal all the way. They are incredibly fast. They're incredibly difficult. It's really something for a symphony orchestra, any symphony orchestra, to play them through. The Warner Brothers Orchestra, when they made these cartoons originally, only had to play them one time. And they would break them up. So they would take What's Opera, Doc, which is, you know, 8 minutes or six and a half minutes long. And they would break it into five or six different cues. So the orchestra would only have to deal with 30 seconds or 1 minute of music at a time. They would perfect it, record it, and then move on to section two. Perfect, record, move on to section. And then a music editor would cut it all together after the fact. In this concert, the orchestra has to play these cartoons straight through beginning to end. And there are 16 of them.
And they have to stay with you because from what I understand, you're watching the big screen and you have a click track in and you conduct along with the screen and the orchestra just follows you? Or is everybody click tracked? How does that happen?
Well, we do it exactly the way that the Warner Brothers Orchestra did it when they recorded these cartoons originally in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. So the entire orchestra is on a click track. So it's a metronome bank, click, click, you know, that beats out the starts for us. And then tempo changes and meter changes, time signature changes. Because these cartoons, there is this incredibly intrinsic marriage between the music and the sound effects. The sound effects were designed by a brilliant guy named Treg Brown, who basically invented the entire language of animation sound effects. And to this day, every animation sound designer is still copying the unbelievable work of Treg Brown. And there is such a fine line between what is music and what is sound effects. So the sound effects are on the cartoon, the film, the video that is running. Right. Then, you know, 3 minutes and 22 seconds into a cartoon, Bugs will start singing. Oh, Boonhild, or Elmer, oh, Boonhild, you're so lovely. And Bugs, yes, I know it, I can't help. That happens like 3 minutes into the cartoon. If we're not there, you know, right. It's fairly noticeable. So I have a sort of a cockpit, an airline cockpit in front of me, where I have, you know, several monitors. So I'm able to see what's on the big screen that the audience is seeing. I'm able to see on another monitor the pre-roll, so I can see when David Wong, our fabulous producer and my co-creator in all this, and also my husband of 30 years.
Congratulations.
30 years, yes. I got a concert and a husband all in the same year in 1990. But anyway, I can see the pre-roll of that. I can see time code numbers. I can see all this other stuff. And then the orchestra has the click track on, just like the orchestra did at Warner Brothers. But yet, at the same time, they have to be watching me because I'm still conducting like a normal conductor, doing artistic things, you know, softer, louder, phrasing, you know, dynamics, all of that kind of stuff. So this is a lot for an orchestra to deal with.
Especially if it's something they don't do on a regular basis.
Right. When we go places like the LA Phil, where those musicians are also playing
film scores.
Film scoring sure. sessions all the time. They know what to do, when to shut it out, when to listen to it, all the kind of stuff. But we had an incredible, incredibly wonderful experience with the Erie Philharmonic last time. They took to like a duck out of water, like a Daffy Duck out of water. And so, you know, I'm really looking forward to these rehearsals and the concerts. The rehearsals start on Friday, tomorrow. And one of the cartoons, the new editions, is called Fur of Flying. And it's a new Looney Tune cartoon. We have five new Looney Tune cartoons that have just been recently done for us in mind by Warner Brothers. And Fur of Flying is like the most difficult Looney Tune score we have ever done. It is fast. It is unrelenting. It is brilliant. It was composed by Christopher Leonards, the Academy Award nominated film composer. We have three cartoons by him now, Fur of Flying, Coyote Falls, and Rabid Rider, all 3D Coyote Warner Brothers, in the Warner Brothers tradition, but now in 3D with Coyote and the Roadrunner. So, but Fur of Flying is like the hardest thing. Previously, the hardest thing I've ever conducted in my life was the Quidditch scene from Harry Potter, which every conductor I know who's had to do it, especially with the film, says it is the hardest thing they've ever done. This is even harder. Luckily, it's only 2.5 minutes long, so, but boy, is it hard. So the audience will really love it. All of that has to come together. It all has to be together.
You're listening to Better Than Monkeys from WQLN Radio.
You mentioned there are some new cartoons and some new music. So not only are you going to get a bunch of chestnuts that you know and love from all the previous Bugs Bunny cartoons that you know and love, but there's going to be some new stuff on this program?
Right. We have five or six new things that are new to the concert. First of all, you mentioned at the outset, and I totally veered away from this, next year, 2020, is Bugs Bunny's 80th birthday. And we are celebrating this in a very big way, and Warner Brothers is celebrating this in a very big way internationally. And one of the things that Warner Brothers is doing to celebrate Bugs's 80th birthday is doing 1,000 minutes of new Looney Tunes.
That's exciting.
Yeah, they're amazing. And they're doing them in the style of Bugs's birth year. So if you look it's great. In fact, there's a fantastic Chuck Jones piece of art that takes its inspiration from the Darwin evolution of man that starts with the
different Bugs Bunnies,
the monkey yeah. primate, and goes all the way through, you know, modern man. And Bugs has had similar changes. The original right. Bugs, his first cartoon was called A Wild Hare. It was, you know, 80 years ago next year. And it was a Tex Avery cartoon. And Bugs had a very different look then than he does now. He's a little smaller, more kind of a feral rabbit, wild, crazy, jumping off the walls. And then, you know, over the years, through all of the great directors he's gone through, so Tex Avery, Bob Clampett, Friz Freleng, you know, Robert McKimson, the great Chuck Jones, he became a lot more sophisticated. I think Friz Freleng was the first one to put him in a tuxedo.
When did the Brooklyn accent come about?
The Brooklyn know? Accent has always been there.
He's
and you
always
know,
had it?
He's always had it. There is great controversy over whether it is a Brooklyn accent or a Bronx accent. And Mel Blanc himself said it is a combination of the two. So who are we to argue with Mel Blanc?
Exactly.
God rest his soul. You know, it was great. We got to work with him for a couple of years, the beginning of this, before he passed away. And we worked with Chuck Jones for like the first 10 years of this. So to be able, and Friz Freleng was around at the beginning. So to be able to pump the brains of these guys, these brilliant, brilliant guys, was just the opportunity of a lifetime. But anyway, they're doing 1,000 minutes. Warner Brothers is doing 1,000 minutes of new cartoons. And so we have the first of those in the concert this time. One of them is called Dynamite Dance. It is set to the Dance of the Hours finale. Yum, ba 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 yum, ba 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 yum, ba 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 yeah, that thing. From La Gioconda by Ponchielli. And it's basically just Elmer and Bugs running around with Bugs throwing dynamite sticks at you know, at Elmer. It's brilliant. It is so fabulous. It's done in the original style. It's only a minute and a half long. And it's really funny because it's like the climax of a 7-minute cartoon, only without the buildup of the previous 6 minutes. It just goes straight for the
right to the end.
Straight for the big right finish.
Big moment.
So it's just fabulous the way the music works with it. Of course, this, you know, the Dance of the Hours is not new to animation. It was in Fantasia, Dancing Hippopotamuses and all of that. But this is very different from that, and it's just brilliant. We have another one called Wet Cement, which is another one of these new ones, and that's with Porky and Daffy. And I don't want to give it away because it is just too funny and too brilliant. And then we have the three new Roadrunner cartoons, Coyote Falls, Rabid Rider, and Fur of Flying. New since the last time we were in Erie, because these things haven't been seen in Erie, we've brought back High Note, which is a cartoon we haven't done for 23 years. It is absolutely brilliant. It won an Academy Award. There are no familiar Looney Tunes characters in it. It's about a staff, a page of music, and the staff lines and the notes and the rest. And in the opening moments of the cartoon, a quarter note falls off the music of the Blue Danube Waltz and lands in the sheet music of How Dry I Am. Wah, 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 wah. And becomes totally intoxicated, totally soused. And there is a 2.5-minute drunken trombone solo in this cartoon that is just brilliant beyond belief. And this note goes back to the Blue Danube and wreaks total havoc. So all of the characters in this are made out of notes and rests and the treble clef sign and the bass clef sign and the staff lines. It's one of Chuck Jones's most brilliant cartoons, and it has none of the familiar characters. So we've brought that back. Corny Concerto we've brought back, which is a great Fritz Freleng cartoon, which also uses the Blue Danube Waltz, as well as Tales of the Vienna Woods. So lots of Johann Strauss. We are bringing back Duck Amuck, which I don't think was seen here the last time. And then we have a completely restored version of really one of my very favorite cartoons, which is Long-Haired Hare, where Bugs shows up at the Hollywood Bowl and torments Giovanni Jones, who we were talking about earlier, the great operatic baritone, where he holds the note so long at the end that the Hollywood Bowl comes crashing down. And
which will not happen in real life at the Hollywood Bowl, mind you.
Funny you should say that, because it did. And we were there. After the Northridge earthquake, which I think was in 1994 or thereabouts, the original shell of the Hollywood Bowl was damaged beyond repair. For the next couple of years, every time they would play anything over Fortissimo, asbestos would rain down on the on the musicians. So they tore it down and built a brand new shell, which is absolutely gorgeous. It's much bigger because the old shell was small. You could barely get the whole LA Philharmonic on the old shell. The new shell is bigger, but it looks exactly the same. But we were the final concert on the old shell before they tore it down and rebuilt the new shell. So literally, there were wrecking balls parked out behind the shell because the next day they tore it down. And we did Long-Haired Hare. We played it specially that night, and the whole audience stood and toasted and drank and lifted their glasses as the bowl came crashing down in the cartoon, and the next day it actually happened.
Came crashing down. Now, did you get to save a little piece for yourself?
Well, yeah, I did, but they wrapped it in plastic, so I wouldn't...
So get asbestos.
I wouldn't get mesothelioma or whatever it is that you get from asbestos. But yeah, I got a little piece of it. So well, I have a little piece of that. I have a little piece of the Sydney Opera House, too, which also had an asbestos problem at one point.
Well, you know, they're doing some renovations on the Warner Theater starting this year, we're hoping. So maybe you can get a little piece of the Warner to take to add to your collection.
You know, last time I was at the Warner Theater, this guy, this amazing man who takes care of the lobby, gave me a little piece of sculpture out of the lobby because he maintains them and he's done moldings that for all of that fabulous stuff in that lobby that looks like the Hall of Mirrors from Versailles, and he actually gave me a little piece, so I actually already have a piece of the Warner Theater.
It's really wonderful that the Warner is sitting up on the same shelf as the Hollywood Bowl and the Sydney Opera House.
Right.
Exciting.
Right.
Well, you're bringing this to Erie. This is the world premiere, technically, of this
new version,
this new production. So that's really exciting for Erie audiences.
Well, and the Erie Philharmonic is an amazing company, because from here we go directly to the Seattle Symphony, and then the Boston Pops, Philadelphia Orchestra, Pittsburgh Symphony, back to the Hollywood Bowl with the Los Angeles Philharmonic, many other major orchestras. We're going to Europe, we're going to Asia, we're going back to Australia. So the Erie Philharmonic is in some pretty major company.
That's pretty exciting. And how did you go from just being a musician working in the world of music to being the conductor and producer of a massive franchise like this now?
Well, that wasn't the original plan. When all this happened, I was really young. Okay, it's 30 years ago, so I was, you know, in my mid 20s.
Right.
Well, actually, I was in my early 30s, but never mind.
Mid 20s.
And I had a really great career going conducting ballet and opera all over the world. I was conducting for American Ballet Theater. I was conducting at La Scala in Milan. I was conducting at Italian opera houses all over the place and ballet companies all over the world. And I thought that's what I would do for the rest of my life. And actually, we were doing a ballet that had animation as one of the scenic elements. And I was consulting with that and making the music happen for that. And one night, the animators and I were hanging out, and we were ordering pizza, and this was in 1989, and they brought out some bootleg Warner Brothers videos. And a lot of people think, you know, characterize me as a lifelong Looney Tunes addict fan that has been crazy, obsessive, compulsive about this my whole life. But I loved these things as a kid. I loved them as a kid. But then I became a normal in quotation marks conductor and forgot about Looney Tunes. And I was working all over the world. You also have to remember that in 1989, we didn't have iPhones, iPads. We didn't have streaming. We didn't have, you know, there were still, most of us only had five channels of television in 1989. And home video was just coming out. There were no DVDs. There weren't even laser discs yet. You know, people were still watching Betamax. And we didn't have the accessibility to these cartoons unless you got up on Saturday morning and watched them every Saturday morning. Well, I had just conducted La Traviata or Aida or Five Acts of Swan Lake the night before, so I wasn't getting up on Saturday morning. Anyway, so we're having pizza, and they bring out these bootleg Warner Brothers videos, and there's What's Opera Doc, there's The Rabbit of Seville, all these Chuck Jones masterpieces, and I was just bowled over how brilliant they were and the way the music was treated and how incredible it was. And I decided at that moment that I wanted to do a concert of the music, of Carl Stalling's music. But immediately I realized that to do it justice and also to have it be fully in context and to make sense, that you had to see the cartoon at the same time. Right. And so I packed my bags and I went to Los Angeles and I cold called Warner Brothers, and this amazing guy named Rick Gear, who is still there, who works in the animation department there, answered the phone. If he hadn't answered the phone and I'd gotten somebody else, this probably never would have happened. But this was right up Rick's alley. And he said, "Great, I'll arrange a meeting. Come in." And so I came in and I pitched it to Warner Brothers. And this was in 1989. And they loved it. They loved the idea. And they helped us get it going. And so we did one test performance in San Diego. They wanted it to be in San Diego so the Warner Brothers executives could come down from LA and see it. But if it was a total disaster, the stench wouldn't come all the way back to LA and they wouldn't, nobody would know about it. But the amazing thing is when it was announced in San Diego for this one performance only, test performance, it sold out in 3 hours.
Wow.
And this was before the internet. So this was based on a newspaper ad and people calling a phone number. Ladies and gentlemen, you used to have to call a phone number to get tickets, to get or you tickets. Have to actually go to this place called a box office. You know, you couldn't do it online. And the audience went nuts. And we only had like 4 cartoons in the show then, as opposed to 16. But that showed us that this worked. And so right after that, Warner Brothers had the lease on the Gershwin Theater. Their production of Showboat closed prematurely, and the phone rang, and they said, can you premiere on Broadway in like 3 weeks? So we hurriedly prepared 2 or 3 other cartoons, but the original show only had 5 or 6 cartoons that the orchestra played live with, and we did other concert music. So that's how it all started, and then over the years, it has just continued to grow and grow. We have about 25 cartoons now that we rotate in and out, and then all this new material. We call ourselves the only cartoon repertory company in the world because
that's true. They're a ballet and opera repertory.
Yeah, companies. They change their rep all the time, and so do we.
Yeah.
You know, and so here we are celebrating not only the 30th anniversary of our concert, but Bugs's 80th birthday.
You're listening to Better Than Monkeys on WQLN Radio.
So do you bump into any blowback from serious musicians? Some orchestra musicians might take themselves pretty seriously. They've devoted their entire life to perfecting the performances of these pieces of music that are a little lighter and funnier versions of maybe the ones they do. Do you find that you ever bump into orchestra musicians who are just not at all amused that they're playing this? Or are most people pretty excited?
The answer is no. Actually, the first people who became champions of Carl Stalling and his compositions and his music were orchestral musicians. Because even though these are cartoons, there is nothing cartoony about the way this music is written.
It's very difficult.
It's like John Cage and Aaron Copland and Stravinsky had a child. And that's how difficult this music is. So orchestral musicians are the first to see that it is really seriously fabulous composition, number one.
Right.
The instrumentation and orchestration is so impeccable.
Is it the original instrumentation
yes.
and orchestration?
Yes, yes. Nice. And because they used the full Warner Brothers orchestra. You know, at Disney for the Silly Symphonies, they used a really small studio orchestra. And also at Hanna-Barbera and most of the other cartoons of that era, they used a small kind of jazzy, really small studio orchestra. Warner Brothers used all 100 musicians that they also used for Casablanca and the Maltese Falcon and you know, now Voyager, you know, the great, you know, scores by Bernard Herrmann and Max Steiner and all of that. They used that same orchestra for the cartoons. So, but the funny thing is that they would never schedule the cartoon scoring sessions ever. They would just wait till they had 15 minutes at the end of some other scoring session for another big movie. And they say, okay, let's throw down a cartoon. And so the call would go out and Carl Stalling and Chuck Jones or Fritz Freeling or whoever the director is would come running across the lot with music flying all over the place. And they throw down one of these cartoons, which I think is what gives the original recordings that sound of sort of abject terror. Because
very frenetic energy. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Because the musicians were like holding on to their chairs while they're trying to play this stuff. Everything is original to this. We even have the original Warner Brothers slide guitar that we found while we were putting this concert together in 1989, 1990. We found in the music department, you know, it was in bad repair, it needed to be put back together.
And if anybody's thinking that's the slide guitar, you hear it.
Boing!
Yeah.
And you know, it's really funny because before we found that guitar, we couldn't find that sound. We tried all kinds of modern slide guitars, country western slide guitars, Nashville slide guitars, Hawaiian luau pedal slide steel guitars. They didn't have the right sound. And we needed the right sound. And so we found this fabulous instrument, but even then, after we had it totally repaired, it wasn't quite the right sound, although it was a lot closer. But then we discovered that we could not plug it into a modern digital SSL or Neve, you know, multi-million dollar digital console.
Had to go into a $300 Marshall amp.
Yeah, Fender.
Fender at that time. Yeah,
Fender. Yeah, tubes. It needs right. tubes because we needed all those dirty overtones that got, right. you know, analog, all the analog, and then it sounded right. So the audience will get a chance to actually see it here in Erie. It'll be on the stage.
That's exciting.
And, but we have tried so hard to make everything be authentic because the funny thing is everyone says, well, you know, they're used to the 1930s, 40s, and 50s mono recordings that they've heard
right.
on these cartoons for their lifetime, and frequently on television on Saturday morning with not great sound. And they were not recorded in stereo, and Warner Brothers didn't save the original musical recording, so they were recorded on something called 35 mag, which was it was film. It wasn't even recording tape. So the original recordings of this music don't have a huge amount of resonance
right.
and
depth,
all of that kind right. of stuff. But you have to remember that when they were recorded, there was a 100-piece orchestra in the greatest scoring stage in the world, which is still on the Warner Brothers lot. Clint Eastwood, it was actually in very bad repair. And Clint Eastwood gave millions of dollars because of his love of music. I don't agree with his politics, but I agree with his love of music. And he gave millions of dollars to have it restored, all with the original wood, the original floor. All of that entered into what the Warner Brothers sound became. But when Chuck Jones and Carl Stalling and those guys heard these scores performed the very first time in that room, they sounded like what they sound like now when we perform it with a symphony orchestra.
Which is probably the way they intended it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
The technology didn't exist to capture it at that point. Right. But no. But that was the longest answer in the world to your question. But no, symphony orchestra musicians do not hate playing this. They love playing this concert. And they recognize the genius and the brilliance of what went into it. I think sometimes they get, you know, all of the sound effects and the click track and all of that. There's a lot going on. And I think they have to get used to that. But it was, interestingly enough, it was music critics in the very beginning that gave us some crap about this.
Right.
That, you know, but then they started noticing something else. Every one of our concerts were selling out. Every one of our concerts everywhere were selding out. When we played the New York Philharmonic in May, you could have gotten a seat to Hamilton
easier
than you could have gotten a seat to every seat was gone. They turned away thousands of people that could not buy tickets. They had no more room to add any more performances. Mm-hmm. Same thing in 2015 in New York when we were at the New York Philharmonic again at Lincoln Center. They even added performances and they still turned away thousands of people. The interesting thing about these audiences who are coming is that normally demographically with a major symphony orchestra like New York Philharmonic or Philadelphia Orchestra or 70% of the people who come to this concert have never been to a symphony orchestra concert before. So people started noticing that we were building audiences. But the amazing thing is they get so excited by hearing and seeing a live symphony orchestra that then they come back to more traditional concerts and they come back to hear Mahler and Brahms and Beethoven and you know, everything else that a symphony orchestra performs. And it's so gorgeously done. I mean, Corny Concerto, the way the Johann Strauss is handled, could be played easily by the Vienna Philharmonic and will be soon because we're going to Europe next
right.
year without anyone getting, you know, upset about it. Carl Stalling and Milt Franklin observed the original traditions of whatever the cartoon was. So for What's Opera Doc and all the Wagner, gigantic, huge Wagnerian instrumentation, huge dynamics. It's the viola lick from the Venusberg Ballet in Tannhäuser. That's right out of the real thing. But it's harder in this than it is in the real thing because it's faster. So it's Wagnerian in size and grandeur. For the Rabbit of Seville, they used a Rossini-sized instrumentation, smaller, like Rossini himself did. So they were so respectful of the intentions of the original composers. Yet at the same time, it is funny. But it's not funny because we're making fun of the music. It's funny because here is this unbelievable, grandiose, huge, spectacular orchestral sound coming. And then on the screen is Bugs Bunny dressed as Brunhilde coming down the side of a mountain on a big white horse with a giant derriere. And he slides down the backside of the horse and Elmer dressed as Siegfried, and they dance a ballet. So the seriousness of the music, as opposed to the hysterical comedic visuals, is what makes this stuff so brilliant. If they'd made the music, you know, cheap and disrespectful, it wouldn't be nearly as fun. We have this. I got a lot of great things from Chuck Jones, but one of the things that I treasure is this copy of his sheet of the way he wanted the Wagner music to appear from these eight Wagnerian operas. And in crayon on a piece of animation paper, he wrote, you know, start with the Flying Dutchman and then go into Rienzi. I mean, first of all, most musicians have never even played Rienzi by Wagner. It was one of his early operas when he was in his Italian sort of a period. You know, for years, I didn't even know what the quote from Rienzi was. And then David and I were in Italy and we went to see Rienzi. And suddenly there was that music and I almost
screamed it out in the
middle. Oh my God, that's it, you know, but I didn't. But anyway, you know, Chuck wrote in order all of the Wagner, the way he wanted to appear and the way the excerpts that he wanted and how he wanted it done, because he was a connoisseur of classical music as well as being a brilliant animation director. So he knew this music intimately. But when you listen to like the Liszt Hungarian Rhapsody, there's a pianist called Jacob Gimpel. And he actually, I don't mean this to be, spoiler alert, everyone, spoiler alert, Bugs doesn't really play the Liszt Hungarian Rhapsody himself.
Oh.
It's played by this
stunt double.
Yeah, a keyboard double, yeah, named Jacob Gimpel, who was one of the foremost pianists of that time. And to show you how seriously they took it all, the Liszt Hungarian Rhapsody is written in C-sharp minor. But when Fritz Freleng animated it, it was too hard for Bugs' hands to get up into the black keys. So he animated it in C major, white keys. The audience should really pay special attention on that particular cartoon, Corny Concerto, to how synced the piano keys going down on the animation is to the music. They didn't have to go to this kind of detail, but they were obsessed with making it be right. So the playing is in C minor, but the music originally was in C sharp minor, and they recorded in C sharp minor. When Jacob Gimpel and Carl Stalling saw the film, they said, "Oh, we can't have it like this. We can't. We can't be playing it at a different key than the animation." So this incredible pianist learned one of the most fiercely difficult pieces of piano repertoire
in a much more difficult key for a pianist.
Yeah, one step down.
Yeah.
And so that's the way we play it.
That's brilliant.
But these are the kind of things, the kind of level of detail that they went to.
And the audience might not be aware of all this detail. They're just going to sit there and see a wonderful cartoon with a great orchestra and have a beautiful evening. But maybe if they listen to this little podcast here, they'll be able to sit there with a little extra insight into what they're going to be seeing on the screen.
And that's the wonderful thing about this. Anybody can come to this concert. Has a really wide demographic range. It's not a kid's concert. Just because it's concert, I'm sorry, it's not a kid's concert. Just because it's cartoons, it's not, you know, Chuck Jones always said, "I didn't make these cartoons for kids. I made them for everybody." And that's what we see in our audience. We see it's great for kids, but it is not specifically for kids. It's not a kid's concert. We see this huge demographic range of people from you know, the old saying from 2 years old to 92 years old, loving it. And we see now, we've been doing it so long that when we go back to New York, I mean, somebody came backstage and they said, when I came to see this the first time in 1990, I was, you know, 20 years old. And now tonight I'm bringing my grandchild, you know, you know, 29 years later. So you don't have to know anything about music or animation to enjoy this concert. Anybody can come to this concert and at just total face value, you can love every single minute of it. Because that's the genius of Chuck Jones and all these directors and of their music. They made it totally accessible to everybody. But if you are a connoisseur of music, if you're especially, I mean, we have this whole group of Wagnerian lovers who come to the Hollywood Bowl. It started out with like 10 or 15 of them. Now there's like 200 to 3 of them, and they all wear the horned helmet with the pigtails. And we have them stand up now and do it at every performance at the Hollywood Bowl, which is seats 18,000 people. And here they are right in the middle, like 200 people with, because they love the Wagner so much and they love the way it's. So if you do know the inside jokes, if you do know something about music, if you do know something about opera, the way the opera is parodied, the way ballet is parodied is hysterical. When Bugs and Elmer dance the ballet in What's Opera Doc, Chuck Jones actually filmed two very famous ballet dancers doing that pas de deux. Then they rotoscoped it. So rotoscoping in that era, I mean, that's something we don't even do anymore because we have computers and
right,
all
absolutely.
This. But rotoscoping basically was they filmed it and then you trace each animation cell over one frame of film. So Elmer's feet are pointed impeccably. Bugs is turned out like a real ballet dancer, and in his right foot is winged when he goes into arabesque. So when ballet dancers watch it, they're hysterical. When Bugs conducts Baton Bunny, the conducting patterns are all impeccable. They're all right out of the conducting pattern book, you know.
And that is a sticking point with modern musicians because with all the clip art that's out there of people playing instruments and they're holding them wrong. And,
yeah, you see a commercial with a cellist and they have the bow in the opposite hand backwards.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And those things just drive real musicians nuts. Yeah. They can't stand it.
I mean, any musician could watch Bugs conducting Baton Bunny and follow it. Like, because Chuck made all, I mean, it's perfect. It's impeccable.
I think you do too, because there's a great picture of Bugs with his hands in the air ready to start, and you're standing right up front in the exact same pose as Bugs.
And that was actually not purposeful. That's just the way it is. You know, the way it's really funny though. We did last time we were here. We did a cartoon version called of Tom and Jerry. Tom and Jerry, the Hollywood Bowl, which is the Deflator Mouse overture, which is absolutely a brilliant cartoon, and I really miss it. I'm going to miss it. We'll put it back in when we go back to Europe because it's perfect for Europe. But that was hard because that's the real Deflator Mouse overture. Doing the real Deflator Mouse overture with click track, with all of those Straussian, stylistic things of, you know, the retardatos and the little accelerandos and all of that. That was hard. But at any rate, Hanna-Barbera did not bother to study the conducting handbook. And Tom and Jerry are the worst conductors in the world. I always say to the orchestra, you can watch Bugs conduct, but do not watch Tom and Jerry conduct because you will not. I mean, it's a brilliant cartoon, but
the attention to detail, just not there.
Well, they were going for other things.
Right.
Tom and Jerry were a whole different thing, and the comedic aspects are brilliant, but don't follow the conducting. And the same thing with, Long-Haired Hair. It's at the Hollywood Bowl. You know, five of the cartoons are set in the Hollywood Bowl. We've played the Hollywood Bowl 22 times with the LA Phil. And now every time the Hollywood Bowl is shown on the screen, the entire audience drinks. It's become a drinking game.
It's been drinking.
And they scream out and they cheer. But at one point, Bugs goes backstage at the Hollywood Bowl, and it's the same backstage as the old shell really had, with the doors in the right place to the dressing room. I mean, you know, at one point they go down through the parking lot. It's still exactly the same. You know, they haven't changed anything at the Hollywood Bowl because it's a, you know, a historic landmark, except they had to do the new shell. Right. But it's just such a glimpse of Hollywood at that time.
Well, we're going to get that glimpse on Saturday night and Saturday afternoon, 2:30 p.m. matinee and an 8 p.m. show at the Warner Theater, conducted by George Daugherty. You're listening to him right here on Classics right now. Do you encourage people to wear their Wagnerian horns?
Absolutely.
And pigtails,
please,
if they've got them?
Please. We've had carrot corsages. We've had bunny ears. We've had bunny tails. Yes, this is a concert where you can come fully involved. You know, it's a very noisy concert. There's tons of sound effects. People say, you know, do you get upset when you hear a cell phone go off in the middle of your concert? And I said, as if I could hear a cell phone go off in the middle of all the Acme, TNT. You know, there's a hysterical... One of the things that happened a few years ago in 2015, where we knew that we actually had become part of the real music world and the real music history, is the New Yorker did a very thorough and fantastic article about our concert. And if anyone wants to find it, it's under WUVY Music, WUVY Music, the New Yorker. It'll pop up online. But they counted the number of TNT, Acme TNT explosions in the concert. And there are a lot of them. So, you know, I'm very conscious when I'm a real conductor. And I'm actually doing Mozart or Mahler or Beethoven.
Because you expect to hear those explosions?
No. I want to hear it. I want to hear the audience being very, very quiet and polite. Oh. And I want, you know, normal, you know, good manners in the concert hall. But this is not a concert where people sure. scream out the lines. It's a little Rocky Horror Picture Show. People become very, very involved because they feel a part of it. They've known this stuff all of their life. Right. And the funny thing is that when I conduct the real Barber of Seville overture in a concert that has nothing to do with Bugs Bunny at the Symphony or Bugs Bunny or Broadway, when I conduct it as part of the opera or in concert, I hear people laughing in the audience at the places in the music where the funny stuff happens in the Rabbit of Seville. And it doesn't even have anything to do with that. I mean, if you go out in a corner in any big city and you go, what is this? Bum, ba, ba, bum, 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 ba, ba, bum, bum. 75% of the people will say, killed a wabbit, killed a wabbit. I mean, this music, with no disrespect to Wagner, Rossini, Donizetti, Strauss, Smetana, von Suppe, Liszt, any of the other composers, this music has become part of our cultural, it's become part of our cultural vernacular. And it's become legitimatized. Legitimate.
Yeah.
Did I make that word up? Legitimatized?
That's okay if you did. We'll coin it.
It's a new
legitimatized.
Word.
Legitimatized. Yeah. But it's a beautiful production. You and David have done a wonderful job of putting this together. We're so excited that you're bringing it to us first. I'm really glad that connection was made.
And in this theater, it is absolutely perfect. And David has done some... He does everything. He runs the video. He runs the projections. He does all the lighting. He does everything but conduct. I conduct. David does everything else, but he's doing some especially fabulous lighting. You know, most film concerts, when you go see Harry Potter or whatever, really put the orchestra in the dark, and they only have music stand lights, and all you see is the big screen. We light the orchestra because what the orchestra is doing and the way it interacts to what is really happening on the screen is so much a part of the comedic brilliance of all this. So at the same time the cartoon musicians are lifting their instruments, the orchestra, the live orchestra is also lifting their instruments. And it's when Bugs Bunny as Leopold Stokowski comes out and makes his entrance, the whole orchestra on the cartoon starts screaming, Leopold, Leopold, Leopold. And last January, when we did this with the Philadelphia Orchestra, they all, because he was their conductor, he was their music director for 40 something years or whatever it was. They all started screaming, Leopold, Leopold. You know, the Philadelphia Orchestra was originally, you know, if there ever was a slightly well-mannered orchestra, it would have been the Philadelphia Orchestra. Now they're screaming out the lines along with us. And, you know, next summer we're going back to the Philadelphia Orchestra to do this concert again, and then hopefully going to Vail and Tanglewood with them. So the fact that we're actually touring with the Philadelphia Orchestra legitimizes us in a way that I never thought possible. So Pennsylvania is the place. You know, this year we're doing Philadelphia, we're doing Pittsburgh, and most importantly, we're doing Erie.
And that's, again, this Saturday.
This Saturday.
The 21st of September, 2:30 and 8 p.m. shows. If you want more information, you can find it at eriephil.org. Is there someplace people can follow this production online? Do you have your own website?
We have our own website, bugsbunny@thesymphony.net or bugsbunny@thesymphony.com. We have a great Facebook page also, and with lots of pictures being posted. And then we have an Instagram page. If you just do #BugsBunnyAtTheSymphony, those will come up. So, but it's such a pleasure to be here. I mean, this orchestra is so amazing. Steve Weiser, who runs this orchestra, is one of the marketing geniuses of the symphony orchestra world. I say over and over and over again that the big, gigantic, major orchestras could learn. He needs to give a masterclass to American Symphony Orchestras on how to market concerts. He does the most brilliant graphics and marketing and everything else he does.
You know what part of that is he's personally involved. You don't see that with a lot of orchestras. They have a marketing person or a marketing team, and the CEO is out doing his CEO stuff. And there's no real attention to all the micro details that Steve makes sure happens.
Right. Well, and one of the other things we find these days, and I mean, this is not said with disrespect, but we're working with marketing teams where they're like 20, 21, 22, 23 years old. They don't even really know this material. I mean, that is also one of the things that's great about bringing kids to this concert is the cartoons are not on Saturday morning anymore. They're not on after school anymore.
They're not even on the weekends at the Warner Theater anymore, which used to be able to go to the Warner, pay a couple of cents, watch a bunch of cartoons.
Right. So we find now that a lot of kids are being exposed to these cartoons for the very first time in our concert. And it's very funny because universally worldwide, no matter where I am, whether it's in China or New York or Erie or LA or Sydney or whatever, I hear three levels of laughter and it's the same everywhere. I hear the kids laughing at certain things. I hear the adults laughing at certain things because as you grow older, you see all this sophistication and all this wit and all this stuff you never noticed. Because Chuck Jones and Fritz Freleng and Bob Clampett and Tex Avery, they were kind of naughty boys in many ways.
Right.
So there are all kinds of
innuendos.
There's not only double entendres, there's triple entendres. And in a couple of places, there's quadruple entendres. And you don't see these until you're adults. So I hear the adults laughing at certain things that the kids don't get. And then I hear everybody laughing at the stuff that everybody gets. And it's consistent the world over. It's the exact same laughter happens at the exact same place. So these cartoons know no border. They know no ethnic division. They know no background. They are for everybody. And they play brilliantly no matter where we go. And they will play especially brilliantly this Saturday.
At the Warner Theater.
At the Warner Theater with the incredible Erie Philharmonic.
Do your soul some good. You can find out more information on this concert by giving the Phil a call at 455-1375. Check them out on the web at eriephil.org. Good for the soul. Good for the family. It's just a good concert, isn't it?
You will feel much better. I promise the only thing you will see on screen with orange facial features during this concert is Daffy Duck.
I somehow knew you were going to go there with that. It is going to be a great concert. You don't want to miss this. Do yourself some good. Be a little wascally this weekend. Thanks very much, George, for joining us here on WQLN.
You're my favorite interviewer anywhere. I love coming here. You're the greatest.
Thank you
so much. He doesn't know how many cultural treasures they have here, and you're one of them.
Well, thanks very much, George. I appreciate it. And thanks for taking time out of your crazy schedule. Have fun at the Warner Theater this weekend. Thank you. So I guess we're going to have a very special guest at the Warner Theater Saturday night also.
Yes, and this is absolutely, you know, perfect timing because as I mentioned earlier on, September 21st, the day of our concert with the Erie Philharmonic, would be the 107th birthday of the great Chuck Jones. And so his incredible granddaughter, Valerie Cousin, who I have known now for 30 years and worked with because she has worked with the family and they're keeping Chuck's legacy alive. Valerie will be here and she is going to make a special presentation to the Erie Philharmonic of an original Chuck Jones signed work of art.
Wow.
Of Bugs Conducting. It's just the most fantastic piece. And all of this goes along with a fantastic animation art exhibition that is going on right now at Edinburgh University. And right. So, you know, the animation world is sort of centering on Erie this weekend. But Valerie is an amazing person. Her mother, Linda Jones, who was Chuck's only daughter, is a dear friend of ours. And we worked with Chuck so often. So having a member of the Chuck Jones family, you know, come with us and appear. Chuck used to come to every concert he could come to. And then he took to, we'd bring a chair out on the stage and he would sit right next to the concertmaster during the concert and just enjoying it all. And then we'd get him up and have him talk, and he would tell stories to the audience, which was fabulous, except he sometimes would go on for, you know, 25 minutes, and I would see orchestra personnel managers in the wings turning bright red as they started calculating the overtime that was right. happening or trying to find the hook. But having Valerie here will be a very, very special thing. And I hope everyone will be able to get to see the animation exhibit at Edinburgh University because it contains a number of Chuck Jones pieces and other Looney Tunes works as well as works from other studios. And it's fantastic.
That's really exciting stuff. So thank you very much. And we'll make sure that everybody knows about this great concert September 21st, this Saturday, 2:30 and 8 p.m. at the Warner Theater. Thanks again very much for coming in and spending some time with us, George.
My pleasure.
Thank you to Steve Weiser and the Erie Philharmonic and their staff for making this interview with George Daugherty possible on Better Than Monkeys. Thank you to George Daugherty for taking time out of his busy performing schedule to spend some time with us here on WQLN Radio. And thank you to you for taking the time to listen to this podcast. We produce it with love and we hope you enjoyed it. You can find more Better Than Monkey podcasts at WQLN.org/BTM. You'll find past interviews with Wynton Marsalis, Cheetah Rivera, Judy Collins, so many other wonderful artists. Also, if you'd like more information on the Erie Philharmonic or any of their upcoming productions, you can find it at eriephil.org. And you can find more information on Bugs Bunny at the Symphony at their website, bugsbunnyatthesymphony.net and bugsbunnyatthesymphony.com. And a special thanks again to YOU for joining me, Brian Hanna, for this episode of Better Than Monkeys, a production of WQLN Radio.
Well, we're now called Bugs Bunny at the Symphony. It started out as called Bugs Bunny on Broadway. Are you editing this? I'm sorry.
Sure, if you want me to.
Can we just start that over?
Sure.
That was horribly grammatically. So
that's okay. You can just
or do it as an outtake.
Scene. Go ahead.
Take five. Okay, I'm leaving. No. Okay.